welcome to the in-person interview component of the new charter application process. My name is Joanna Medina, and I will be facilitating today's interview. This interview will be recorded. It's 10:15 a.m., October 27, 2015. This is the in-person interview of Highland Prep. The board and technical review panel appreciate that you've come today. We understand that the application process requires time, effort, and incentive commitment, and we wish to thank you for your interest in providing quality educational choices to the children of Arizona. The purpose of this interview is for the applicant to demonstrate how well they understand and have thought through the plan presented in the written application. The interview panel will use the responses to the questions to evaluate the capacity of the applicant to successfully implement the plan to operate a high-quality charter school. We will start with the introduction of the interview panel.
Good morning. I'm Doug Thaman. I'm the Executive Director for the Missouri Charter Public School Association and have served for the last 3 years on technical review panels for the Arizona Charter School Board.
I'm Susan Chan. I'm Executive Director of Kingman Academy of Learning, an original charter school in Arizona, and this is also my third year working on the TRP process.
And my name is Joanne Medina. I'm the Assistant Director of Academic Affairs, also a staff member who facilitated the review of the written application package. And to the end is Rachel Hanna. She's going to be doing the recording and taking notes for this interview. Next, I will go over the details of today's interview, and following that, I would like to give the applicant team the opportunity to introduce themselves, which will be followed by your opening statement. This interview will last 90 minutes. I'll now review the procedures and ground rules for the interview process. You'll be given 5 minutes for introductions and to make your opening statement. A staff member will cue you when you have 1 minute remaining and when the 5 minutes is complete. Expect to spend 2 to 3 minutes on the initial response to a question, allowing time for any follow-up questions made by the interview panel. Designate a primary respondent for each question, and feel free to ask for a clarification. In order to give you the opportunity to respond to all of our questions, we will alert you to the amount of time that is passed during your response. We may ask you to move on and give you an opportunity to address any other responses in your closing statement. When 10 minutes remain in the interview period, you'll be asked to make a closing statement of no more than 5 minutes. I will conclude the interview with a description of the next steps and details about the final decision-making process. Do you have any questions about the procedures or ground rules for this interview?
No. Thank you.
Please introduce your team and include what role each member played in the application process, as well as what role each member intends to have if the charter is approved.
Good morning. Thank you for the privilege of being here today. We recognize that this is an important opportunity, not only for us, but for the community of Buckeye and Goodyear. We look forward to serving there. My name is Kerry Clark. I'll serve as founder and director of Highland Prep, STEM College Preparatory High School. Since 2001, I've served at four high schools, all Title I schools. My first school, Peoria Accelerated High School, was a turnaround assignment, ran it for 5 years. We took it from a culture of low expectations to high expectations and high academic results. My second school was a startup assignment, Southridge High School in 2006. I ran that school for over 5 years. The school was recognized by U.S. News and World Reports as one of America's best high schools in 2010, 11, and every year thus far since. Southridge High School was established in a community, again, with low expectations, and the school served as a catalyst for much-needed reform in education. In 2012, I served as a turnaround principal for Imagine Schools, and so I went into Imagine Prep Superstition and Apache Junction and did a refocus with my team at that school and turned it into a STEM school. That school would later be in 2013 recognized as one of America's best high schools. My previous two high schools, both are high reward Title I schools. Both schools received A labels, and both schools were very successful and important additions to the community. Currently, I serve as founder and principal of Madison Highland Prep. It's my pleasure to introduce Mr. Scott Keyes, Highland Prep's proposed governing board member. And he's a CPA also, and assists with our current school, Madison Highland Prep.
Thank you. Good morning. My name is Scott Keyes. I am a proposed governing board member for Highland Prep. I am a CPA certified public accountant licensed in the state of Arizona, also a certified fraud examiner, a licensed certified fraud examiner. My specialty is finance, obviously. I assisted in the application with the operations portion and the business portion. I have 16 years of experience in exclusively school finance and nonprofit accounting. I've spent the last 16 years working with school districts and charter schools from across the state of Arizona. I currently represent over 60 charter schools with various levels of consulting, all financial related. I work with the association, the Charter Association, Arizona Charter Association, doing various presentations for their group.
Highland Prep is a STEM college preparatory high school that will provide students access to rigorous pre-advanced placement curriculum, STEM preparation, advanced placement curriculum, and authentic four-year college and university preparation. Highland Prep's targeted community has been underserved in each of these areas, as evidenced by an absence in high school STEM programming in our target area, but also statewide at just 8.9% of students who enter STEM programs. Low participation in the area in AP curriculum and a lower rate of college completion than state and certainly national averages. Highland Prep's mission is vital to the West Valley communities of Goodyear and Buckeye and surrounding communities. Highland Prep's target area may be characterized as high need, defined through poverty and minority indexes, as well as academic performance. Highland Prep's target community is comprised of students, 77% of whom are minority, and thus, according to ADE, at a 14 times a greater likelihood of dropping out of high school. The average high school pass rates on the AIMS test for the proposed school's territory are just 42% for math, 74% reading, and 35% for science, which underscores the need for a high-quality STEM college preparatory high school. The statistics at the middle school level were equally as concerning, and we look forward to serving students at a much earlier grade than even with outreach than even just once they arrive to us at the high school level. Mr. Keyes and I believe that with the right structure and supports, our students can be successful regardless of what level that they arrive to us, and our goal will be to ensure that each of them grows and meets the qualifications it takes not only to graduate from high school but to qualify again for any four-year college or university of their choosing. Thank you.
Thank you, and I want to thank you for the time and the work you've done to date and for being here today. We've all read your application. We're looking forward to the discussion and want to make sure you know that as we're typing on laptops, taking notes, we're just gathering a lot of information and we are paying attention to what you're saying. Also, just because we do have a limited amount of time, I wanted to ask your understanding that if we cut you off during a response to a question, we do have a number of areas we want to get through and really provide you an opportunity to speak to all aspects of the application. So with that, I want to go ahead and just turn to our first question, which is if you could just describe a typical day in the life of a Highland Prep student to us and kind of focus on what it is that distinguishes the culture of this school as being different from others.
Okay. As soon as they arrive to campus, either by bus, on foot, bicycle, or by car, they would observe me greeting them each and every day out front of the school. They would immediately probably lock eyes with some of their friends who are waiting for them, and we would probably be shooing them into the cafeteria so that they can get some breakfast. That's breakfast is from 7:30 to 8 o'clock. at 8 o'clock. They would all be in their classrooms to begin the day, and they would be in classrooms with teachers who know them, know each and every one of their names, know about their academic particulars, and even over concerning issues that could affect them in the home. During the course of that day, each of my students should be able to notice me in each and every one of their classes throughout the day. That's about where I spend 75% of my day. They should also probably see my dean or my director of curriculum in the classrooms. So each of the classrooms is quite a high profile area where students and teachers expect to see people who not only visit but come in to see, check the climate of the classroom.
How will you approach the sometimes complex issues that accompany students who have an IEP and multiple diagnoses?
We endeavor to meet with middle schools well in advance of the school year to be a part of the transition process. So wherever possible, we have done that in the past. We send for records early as we can get them, and we stay on that course. Sometimes schools aren't as good at sending records as we would like them to be, so we press them and continue to stay on them based on the survey data where someone's checked that they previously had an IEP or otherwise, if we know through other means. So we endeavor to get the paperwork as soon as possible so that we can begin planning and accommodating those students in our education plan relative to classes that they're assigned for and structured remediation.
Are you the one that oversees the documentation revolved around special education?
I do not do it single-handedly, but certainly I do play an active role in it by monitoring my front office in terms of their screening processes, 45-day screenings, as well as interfacing with or interacting with our special education coordinator.
Would you take that a step further? You talk about meeting with middle schools for the transition, having the records, so now the students are at Highland Prep. How do you address those complex needs?
So we compile a survey of their each of the students' names, their relative information, so that we can ensure that we schedule for upcoming IEP meetings, and so that we can immediately begin planning for whatever services that they might need, counseling or speech, so it's a process meant to be active, to hit the ground running for each and every student. Teachers are apprised of who their students are who have special needs, as well as students who have a 504, as well as students obviously who are ELL.
So who provides teachers with the support they need to meet the needs of these students?
We have a special education coordinator. And so students are offered accommodations and modifications in their classroom setting in a full inclusion environment, although we do offer a full continuum of services.
You mentioned ELL learners. How do you meet their needs?
Depending on the number of students, if we're talking currently, we're an ILLP school. Previously, in the first year for Southridge, in our first 2 years, we had a program where we had enough students at that level. So it depends on the setting. In the area that we're in, we could be an ILLP school, or it could be that we have a bigger program. It's difficult to say. Currently, students, our teacher lesson plans include language objectives. Students provide extra assistance. Students who are facing the ESELA, we have ESELA study groups, and students are provided extra support, not just students with disabilities, not just students with who are ELL, but all students can stay after school for up to 2 hours, 4 days per week to get extra help and support from their teachers in classroom environments. And where they're not taking advantage of that, we prescribe.
What about students who are homeless or at risk of academic failure?
Currently, my curriculum director is my McKinney-Vento coordinator. We do pay attention for that. We do receive anecdotal feedback from teachers. We do follow up. We do endeavor to find out how our students are doing, not just obviously cognitively, but also affectively, not only in the classroom, but in the environment, the home environment. So building relationships is our best way, usually, to figure out who needs extra help and assistance. In cases where we find out that they do, we waive sports fees, other fees that they might have. We cover other expenses and scholarship things for them to make sure that they can have full participation in our programs.
And I just want to do a follow-up question. You mentioned prescribing tutoring. So what type of student is prescribed tutoring?
Any student who falls below a C is automatically prescribed to tutoring. We have tutoring contracts as well if we have to get formal. We usually don't have to get that formal. Usually it's short term. Usually we can say, you know, once you raise your grade up to a B, you're out of tutoring. Get a form signed by mom, dad, teacher, send us follow-up, and then, you know, we'll meet with the student. We'll say, hey, congratulations, your grade is up now. You know, if you want to continue to get extra help after school, go ahead and do so, but we're not going to mandate that you go to it. There's a, I don't want to over-answer that question, but I mean, we create workshops based on strand analysis for our students, based on beginning of course and end of course data. We provide extra remediation and enrichment for our students individually and per cohort as well.
What is the percent at the Madison Highland Prep campus? What's the percent of special education students and ELL students?
So it was 12%. I think we're up to 14% at the moment.
That's for special education?
Correct.
And what about ELL?
ELL students, quite low at that school, 1%.
So the next question is, why are the AP classes only 2 credit hours and not 3?
Only 2 credit hours. So each, they count for, our credits are half a credit per quarter. So 1 semester is 1 credit, 1 year is 2 credits. You can take 2 years, a lot of AP courses are 2 years in duration. So what can usually take 2 years in a traditional semester-based schedule can be done in 1 year at our school, and as a result, 2 credits. With our 4x4, 4 classes, 90 minutes long, it's kind of an immersion approach to learning, and so our students progress. Again, they work at basically twice the rate.
So we were talking about high-need students. Would you share your plans to ensure struggling students are able to complete their coursework?
So similar to Madison Highland Prep, with the proposed new school, Highland Prep, and actually something that's been going on for many years in schools that I've run, my education team and I have consistently provided venues for students to work either before school, after school, at lunch, and we protect time to make sure that our students have the relative time that they need to be caught up with each other. We ensure equity not by treating all of our students the same, but ensuring that each of our students gets to the same place. So some of our students really don't have to stay after school much at all, and some of our students stay after school each and every day and basically all year long.
So will a student with remedial needs be able to finish required courses within their 1 to 3 years of attendance?
Absolutely, and further, we have seen in the past, and we're confident that going forward, our students who arrive to us weak or have some struggles, at least initially, and maybe even at certain junctures, that they will take one AP class at a minimum before they graduate. So we've got time to spend the time that we need. For instance, if we had a student who could do Algebra 1 in 1 semester, that would be basically 2 years worth. then in other words, students who need a year of algebra are going to get a year of algebra at our school. Students who can do it in one semester, they'll get that. So Algebra 1 particularly is something that they've got to master. It's the base for all subsequent math, and they've got to be strong in it. So again, we don't assign each of our students the same sorts of classes, particularly as freshmen. We have to build up a foundation for some of them who arrive to us week from the eighth grade.
So how about on the other end of that, students who need more than a year to do algebra, or more than, they need additional time?
So to get our high school diploma, it's Algebra 1, Geometry, Algebra 2, and then we go beyond the state, what they mandate, because we're meeting four-year college and university prerequisites, so we mandate that our students have probability statistics, mm-hmm. and then trigonometry. So that's quite a bit of math, but if you consider that some of our freshmen do algebra first semester as freshmen, geometry second semester, first semester of their sophomore year, they could be taking Algebra 2. Then it's kind of easy to see that in their senior year, they wouldn't have to take any math at all. But of course, we want all of them to, if possible, and in which case, students who have are strong in math per se, they could want to take college algebra. They could take AP statistics, which is what six of my juniors are taking at the moment. And students who needed to spend more time in Algebra 1 to make sure that they're solid, they can jump into their sophomore year still taking Algebra 1 if necessary, because the one thing I've seen time and time again is until you master Algebra 1, it's going to have a snowball effect in subsequent classes.
So please share with us your plans for ensuring strategies learned in professional development are implemented with fidelity.
In the charter application, we've made provision for extensive professional development hours. We've protected that time, allotted it, and protected it almost every Wednesday as an early release day. Of those 2 hours that my teachers have, 1 hour is PLC and 1 hour is for their own individual instructional planning. So we want to make sure that we don't obscure PLC time with their individual instructional planning, although obviously there's some overlapping, hopefully. But with the PLC time, each PLC training has a specific agenda, specific items to cover, meeting notes, as well as outcomes. We also solicit feedback from our teachers.
So how do you monitor effectively the use of new strategies at least twice a year?
I go to each and every classroom each and every day. We do two formal evaluations. I also like to, I'm a big fan of what Malcolm Gladwell would call thin slicing. Every time I go into the classroom, I'm basically observing and evaluating. It could be a minute to just kind of assess the culture, the climate in the room. It could be 5 minutes, it could be 10, it could be half an hour or longer. I can stay if there's a concern at the moment, something that's on my radar screen that I want to pay attention to. If I'm seeing what I want to see, then I can move on. But yes, my director of curriculum and I, we verify on a day-to-day basis that our professional development plans are well on track and being adhered to with utter fidelity. We have a really ambitious professional development plan. Within 3 years, our teachers have to have mastery in our school's formative assessment instructional program. So that for them to become master, for them to master that in 3 years, means that we've got to work with them every day. We also have open lines of communication where they can indicate concerns by feedback, verbal or come in and just meet, or you can send emails or whatever supports that we can provide. We do. Yeah.
Will the school have an academic coach or an outside evaluator?
Yes, absolutely.
Is that currently in place at NEST?
Last year we participated in the Harvard instructional rounds with Jason Moody and her group, and we asked them to provide us feedback in a particular area, and they did. We utilized that for feedback and re- reported back to our teachers, and it influenced how we were looking at some other practices, and one in particular, which was formative assessment questioning in the classroom setting.
So is that something that the academic coach is doing? Is it an academic coach or?
So that was external, and we welcome external evaluations. In terms of in-house, obviously we've got the two formals, and then we do snapshots. So I give a snapshot based on when I go into a classroom, and I just provide it to the teacher. Our teachers know that one mini observation does not equal a picture of what they're doing or not doing in their classroom. It's just feedback. It's meant kind of in a concerns-based adoption model format, kind of a CBAM approach. It's meant in a coaching less than it is an evaluative way. So they can feedback and they say, okay, yeah, good. Thanks. I needed to know that. Can you give me a little more insight on this?
Are your snapshots of, for lack of a better word, a formal piece of information that's given, or is it written on a post-it note? Here you go.
Oh, it's
a form. Do you have a form?
It's a form that we've adapted, absolutely.
Scott, does the executive director have responsibilities at both? Will he have responsibilities at both schools?
Correct.
And if so, okay, so then what are those responsibilities?
Oversight of, high-level oversight of and implementation of the mission of the school, of both schools. I don't know if you want to talk a little. What specifically, I guess I need a little more clarification. You want job duties?
Well, if when somebody, this is two campuses.
Correct.
Need to be on both campuses when they're there. What are the responsibilities that the executive director is going to be performing at those places, both those places?
Probably can answer that. Okay. And we anticipate that we'll have a principal at each of the two schools, and that I'll serve as director for over both of those schools and spend my time thus half in each school. In terms of what my duties would be, as stated in the application, oversight, interfacing with the charter board, interfacing with outside agencies, providing support resources for the school, monitoring practices, supporting the principal and the education team.
And that's how the overall budget and personnel plan were developed, half-time at each school with a full-time principal at each school.
Excuse me, please explain how you plan to recruit board members.
So we have, since, and obviously can't introduce it today, we have been actively seeking board members, and we've found some we've proposed board members who will be high impact people who are very interested in the mission, the vision of the proposed school, people who have background experience, people who are esteemed, people who are known to have good character, people who meet all the criteria to be a solid board member.
We have two additional individuals that have already committed. One, so that would leave one additional position to be filled. And what we were looking for was a diverse skill set in recruiting the individuals. Not only specific charter school knowledge, but outside corporate experience, as well as finance, academia, a very well-rounded board. And we have one more spot to fill at this particular.
So you touched on this a little bit when you talked about the snapshots. So how and for what purpose will teachers be evaluated?
Teachers are evaluated to to help them improve so that the education team can be strong as a whole, but also so that each teacher can be supported in his or her career to make sure that they evolve their craft. We will use the Charlotte Danielson model. That's where we have the instruments that we use, such as the snapshot instrument. They're trained on it in the summer in service, and they know how it works. We focus on each of the four domains. When we do provide feedback, it's scripted and it's coded, and so we're able to discuss, pinpoint, and provide fact-based feedback to our teachers. Again, with an eye on helping them to improve. So I would say that our teachers feel that we're interested in helping them to improve and at a good, ambitious pace. Back in the day, the gotcha, I caught you doing the wrong thing or didn't catch you doing the right thing, those days hopefully are gone or going in most schools if we're going to get the kind of results and achievement that we need to get in the classroom and out of our teachers, and particularly if we're going to attract and retain high-quality professionals. They have to feel supported and nurtured.
So currently, Madison Highland Prep is in their second year.
Yes.
So what is the teacher retention at your school, at that particular school?
Okay, so if we're talking about from the first year, last year was startup, to this year, the retention, we lost six teachers.
And how many teachers do you
six
have?
Six out of ten. One teacher moved to the Midwest. Two teachers were not successful, others. It's a very hardworking startup. It's very, very challenging and very stressful. And to be able to subordinate your own self-interests to the greater good, to the cause, that's asking a lot of anybody. But particularly for the ambitious mandate of the school, that's asking for an awful lot. I can tell you that going forward, boy, do we ever have a strong team, and it was good for the school.
So what was your teacher recruitment like then for this upcoming year?
We worked on it early, and we worked on it, we put an awful lot of effort towards it, we had teachers and other educators recommended to us from folks outside of our organization. I think it's important to have feedback to get new ideas from other organizations, districts even, and other charters. So some of our teachers that arrived to us came with recommendations. It was challenging finding a STEM teacher and the art teacher. As you know, there's quite a critical shortage of teachers in Arizona. We got on it really early, and we're very fortunate to fill our team.
Can I ask a question?
So where did you find these teachers? Did they all come from the state of Arizona?
One of our teachers is from out of state, and the rest are from Arizona. I'm thinking as I'm talking to you right now in terms of their backgrounds. Two of them were at districts where they were valued, but due to downsizing budgets and so forth, there were not spots for them. But yet they were well respected and valued. So. We were happy to pick up those folks.
And going forward with Highland Prep, where will you start your recruitment efforts?
So since I've been a principal for 14 years, I've met a lot of people over the years and people that I'm still in contact with. And so as the current school, it wasn't close to where some of these folks lived. The new school would be where several of these people live. So I hope to do it to a degree from word of mouth and from networking and from interfacing with other educational professionals out there. But otherwise, we'll definitely advertise on the Department of Education's website. We did place an ad last year in the Education Week. Our music teacher, which was toughest, that was 11th hour, but she is fantastic, and that was through networking at music stores. She was at a point in her life where, despite having a master's in fine arts and being a professional musician, she was just looking for part-time, which was what was going against us for finding a music teacher to begin with. There was enough jobs out there that they could kind of have their pick.
So I'm going to ask you, using your three-year budget, I wanted to look at the contracted services and just ask you to walk us through those services and kind of how the numbers work.
Okay. The contracted services are made up of legal, special ed, and accounting, obviously. We try to keep, and these are based on what we know, what we've experienced, what the experience was with Madison, what my experience was. The accounting side was assuming that I would volunteer a certain amount of time, especially in startup, to minimize the cost for my experiences. Hopefully the legal budget was built based on no extraordinary things that have to be dealt with. The contractor services are skinny for sure, as the budget is initially in startup. Special ed, and considering special ed services and outside services, we're going to have an internal, a special ed coordinator, and then outsource some. And again, that is a very skinny budget, but it's based on the fact that, again, we did not, in our budget, our revenue projections, we didn't account for any grants. We didn't account for any special ed type B add-ons for special ed. And obviously, that is part of the funding formula. We projected our revenue just on the base. So because it's hard to project the population that you're going to have on the special ed side. So factoring, if you have two autistic children that are high needs, you weight that, and they're worth 6 point whatever, and that's an additional funding source that obviously goes to service those needs, which would require more contracted services, outside services, so those weren't necessarily factored in. If those revenues were factored in, then obviously we would budget higher on that, because that would go directly in this, and also with any IDEA monies that we have. Madison's allocation this year was $16,000 for IDEA, and that all went to outside services and the consulting services. Now, that being said, we know that number is going to be higher. It was higher this year based on Madison's experience, but we try to make it work.
Yeah. This actually goes back to when we were talking about the applicant team. So just as a clarification, the corporate board will have the corporate board that then will have their own school governing body. Is that correct? Is that the structure?
Yes.
That you'll have for Highland Prep. So I know that in the original application, Mr. Keyes was mentioned as a corporate principal. So is that still your intent, that if this charter were to get approved, that you wouldn't, would you still be the school governing board member?
School governing board,
not corporate board member.
Not corporate board member.
Okay.
Correct. Governing board.
Thank you.
We need to talk about recruiting teachers. I jumped ahead a little bit in my questioning, but what challenges have you faced and do you foresee facing recruiting these people?
When you're establishing a brand new school, there's always a factor of risk for everyone. And you're a teacher, whether you're new and you want to have the right start, or you're existing and you want to have a new adventure. When you're doing a startup, not all startups are successful. And so you're looking for bold and intrepid people, people who believe so strongly in the vision and the mission that they're willing to tie themselves and their own future to its success. People who are lead purpose-driven lives, people who identify with who they are as by, to a degree at least, what they do. And so the school is such a unique niche in terms of who and what it does, what, you know, who it serves and what it does for the community, that it really has to speak to individual teachers. And so early communication, making it very clear what the school is and getting them to see the vision. We did find it was easy to have people identify with the importance of a STEM school, STEM college preparatory school. We did find it was easy for people to understand the importance of exposing the students to and creating more opportunities to participate in the advanced placement curriculum. What was and has been the issue is for people to really examine themselves and say, do I have what it takes? Am I willing to sacrifice to actually create a situation where we actually meet these students' needs and at the high level that you propose, which means that I could have been a superstar in my previous environment, but in this new environment, in some ways, I'm starting all over. And that was remarked by one of our teachers with regard to our framework for teaching, the Charlotte Danielson model, and how it kind of takes, it's kind of a higher, it asks for much more of people. So whereas people were very confident previously in what they could do, they're, it necessitates a growth mindset in everybody. So it's we don't take it lightly that it's recruitment, particularly since this past summer, reading some of the media and understanding the critical teacher shortage, and then even recent events that make folks question whether or not it's a good career or whether or not it's a good career in Arizona. You really have to have a mission they can identify with. If we feel like we're not getting necessary traction, we will we'll definitely go out of state in our search.
And I just have a follow-up question. You mentioned earlier that after-school tutoring. So can you kind of talk to me about what does your teacher day look like? What's their schedule?
It's tough, and you've kind of honed in on one area, you could call it, Rob, if you will. Teachers really have to be somewhat altruistic in terms of giving up their time for students. If you're arriving to teach at 7:30 a.m., you're out on duty at 7:45, you're teaching four 90-minute long classes. There is a 30-minute lunch, but on the other hand, some days on a real rotating schedule, you know, you're doing some degree of supervision, which isn't to say you can't be eating, but not an awful lot of downtime at our school, and that's a concern for some folks. Other folks appear to be oblivious to it, or at least that's how they appear. In terms of the school day ending at 2:30, some of the teachers have to provide more tutoring than others, particularly tough for math teachers. One of my math teachers right now, I can kind of visualize her. Yesterday I went in after school, it was 3:30, she was still tutoring students, and I just kind of marveled at her contributions and her, she was just, I said, how are you doing? She says, great, we're making some good progress. She just looked very positive about it, but I recall thinking, thank goodness that you're so committed. It's a tough day.
So your teachers all teach four classes?
Correct.
With
no well, we have two part-time teachers. So our fine arts music teacher and our fine arts art teacher are both 0.5 FTE.
Okay. But your full-times have no prep hour, basically.
No.
Is that correct?
Correct.
Okay.
Well, in theory, 2:30 to 3:30,
correct.
The contract day would
right.
be prep hour.
But if the tutoring is 2 hours, it goes till 4:30?
Tutoring can go up to 4:30, correct. When it does, we do schedule that on a rotating schedule.
Okay. So this question is in regards to your three-year operational budget plan. You include a line item of $45,000 revenue in your first year. Would you please provide us more detail regarding the source of these dollars?
Are you talking about under secured funds?
Yes, it's a secured funds loans.
Yeah, that would be factoring in possibly additional secured loans by either the founder or what we've also seen is that could come in the form of credit. That's obviously in the first year you're looking for all ways to maximize the budget and to provide everything that you need. So in the first year of any operation, there might need to be additional secured lines of credit or whether that's credit cards, whether that's bank loans, whether that's founder loans, whether that's whatever source of funding that is, that could be multiple sources to make that budget a balanced budget in the first year.
So those are not guaranteed dollars at this point?
They're guaranteed. I will cover them if I have to, if it comes down to just being.
They would be guaranteed. That's the reason we put them in, is because they are guaranteed, but the actual source of them is dependent on where we need to go. If we get a couple lines of credit or some extended credit cards, as we did with Madison, we'll float some credit cards to make sure that we have enough capacity to provide everything that we need.
Let's turn. Did you have a follow-up to that, Joanna?
No, I didn't.
No. Okay. Extracurricular activities. Will there be extracurricular activities available to students, and in the budget, where are those costs?
Those costs. I'll as Scott looks for those costs, I'll discuss briefly after-school activities. As with Madison Island Prep, the school has a robust after-school program, both with clubs and sports. We think that that's important for students to have a full-rounded experience. We think also at a college preparatory school, those are a necessary part of the program.
And those are under, some of the budget is under contracted services, extracurricular sports expense that you see there, $15,000 in the first year, $40,000 in the second year, and $60,300 in the third year. Again, the plan is this budget was built with base state equalization money. Our experience tells us that if in the first, second years of operation, we'll raise money through activity fees, extracurricular tax credit money, booster clubs, other sources of revenue to help offset, not completely offset, but to help offset the cost of the extracurricular sports and activities to a certain degree. The general monies, their base support level monies that we get from the state are still gonna have to supplement that, because typically, especially in the first year of operation, even in the second year, those monies are not very high.
So you were talking about extracurricular program. What do you foresee being provided? And
clubs, student clubs, the usual academic clubs, National Honor Society, Student Council, Future Business Leaders of America, or DECA, depending on how things work out. other clubs based on student impetus, student and family impetus, which they'll be able to provide early in the process. So although we've written a charter and endeavor to write down every detail that we can, there is a flexibility as we're developing this in the community to take stakeholder feedback and to have it help us craft what some of these clubs are and also some of the sports. We have a couple of sports at Madison Highland Prep that we wouldn't have if there hadn't been a strong draw from our community, from our constituents. In terms of sports, definitely we'll have seasonal sports, fall sports, winter sports, and spring sports.
Are you thinking about relative to those sports, intramural sports or actually interscholastic sports?
So the sports we would probably play in the Canyon State Athletic Association, so at least for the first couple of years, depending on it, how it went. So definitely interscholastic. In terms of intramurals, we haven't had previously an experience with that at the high school level. Definitely I see a lot of that at the middle school level. But at high schools, when they're really big and comprehensive, I have seen intramurals. We currently have 85% of our students who are involved in our after-school programs, be it a club or a sport. So we think that's really important for students, not just to go on at 2:30, but to be actively involved in the fabric of their school.
And what's the teacher's involvement in the extracurriculars?
So faculty sponsors for the clubs. And then in terms of coaching, we do prefer as much of our coaching to be carried out by faculty as possible for purposes of continuity, building relationships with students where teachers can see their students in other venues outside of the classroom. We can do it. And then in terms of compensating them with stipends. Sometimes when you have external or, people who come in from the outside, especially if you don't know them, then if you're trying to build a culture, I'm kind of protective of that culture. I want to really make sure that the vision is carried out. And if you have folks coming from the outside, who knows what they're thinking or what their interpretation or adaptation of that vision would be.
Just let me talk about your teachers in extracurricular and tutoring. How does that all mesh together?
It's busy. Yeah, it's very busy. Lots of scheduling, conversations, sometimes revising plans, and sometimes having a teacher say, you've got me on the rotation, but you've got me doing this. In which case, we can say, oh, thanks for telling us. We need to fix that. We'll give you a quick fix on that, and do you have any feedback for us on that, any suggestions? People, we want our faculty to feel that we've set them up to be successful, not that we've overwhelmed them. So when you're trying to provide a comprehensive academic and extracurricular experience for your students with a relatively small education team, that is a challenge.
And many people wear many hats. I mean, it's just not the teachers that are involved in the extracurricular. It's also administration.
Yeah.
The director of curriculum of Madison is the soccer coach.
Which means that when he is, I gotta cover his duty and I gotta stay later for some things that I didn't want to, or if he's out at a soccer match, I've gotta cover things. I've gotta support him in doing that.
Many hats.
What about facilities? Some of those, extracurriculars need some facilities.
So currently, the wonderful thing about our current arrangement, of course, is that we have the run of a campus. We have a good relationship with our local area schools as well, where we can use their facilities that we have. So that's, I don't want to say that's effortless, but it's been much easier than ever before. Previous schools, though, lots of planning. Reserving gyms, reserving fields.
It's having conversations with the local community and organizations such as the cities to utilize parks and recs and scheduling. Obviously, space is at a premium, and as a new charter school, you're probably don't have the means or the resources to build the Taj Mahal in your first year with gyms and all the bells and whistles. So it definitely is using the community and the resources and networking with individuals to find space. And to be honest, other high schools and charter schools in the area that are willing. I know there's lots of partnerships between charter schools that have different facilities. It's an income source for the charter school who's renting, and a convenience for the charter school that doesn't have that facility.
So what is the lowest enrollment number that would make it feasible for you to open? And what are your contingency plans if you don't reach that number?
Do you want to speak to that, or do you want me to speak to that?
Go ahead, you can start.
Okay,
off.
So
provide some anecdotal feedback.
Yeah, that we are fresh off that challenge for sure. The minimum number that I think is operationally feasible is somewhere between 90 and 100 students to make it work and to have the model implemented that Dr. Clark wants to have in place and functioning, which is a model, a very comprehensive model with a full plethora of activities. So 90 to 100 is where we need to be. That being said, you know, the budget is built off 150, off of 127, because we did 85% of the total 150, and so I think that's 127.5 or some other decimal point. So that's what we built that off of. Obviously, if we don't get to that number, there's going to be some things that have to be. Obviously, we're going to have to look at the expenses and cut appropriately, and we're also going to have to look for potential other revenue sources or sources of financing. And we have, fortunately, this last year with Madison and as a startup, we've gone through that, so we've made the connections, the networking,
built some credit
and built some relationships with local banks and local funding sources that we could potentially lean on until we got the number we needed to be financially solvent. So yeah, it can work at night in between 90 and 100. Below 90, it's probably not going to happen. But that being said, in that first year, we would have to definitely look to cut some things and try to reach out and gain some financing.
To that point, one of the reasons why one of the reasons why we are starting with freshmen on this budget and with this school instead of freshmen and sophomores, as I did with Madison Island Prep, as we did with Madison Island Prep, is because we can hire 6 teachers year one, 10 year two, and so on. With the first year at Madison Island Prep, we doing 9th and 10th grade necessitated 10 teachers. Then when we had less students, because that's what happened, most people probably would have cut the teacher staff down to 6, but we didn't, and we took a calculated loss on purpose in order to lose to win later. In other words, in order to be guilty of everything we said we would do for the stakeholder community, in order to offer every sport, every extracurricular, every class, every course, every level that we said that we would do. So. Definitely learned some lessons from it. What I learned was, number one, start out with freshmen. Number two, if know your area, and if you're trying to do sophomores, you're looking for sophomores that are disaffected, sophomores that are in the area. And in the area I'm in right now, there's far less disaffected sophomores than perhaps in many other communities. It's also easier to grow your own culture, especially with our high expectations. So with freshmen, accommodating 6 freshmen very strategically with 6 teachers is very doable. The things that we're promising our future constituents are in line with that, which is on the high side of reasonable, but definitely doable.
How many students do you currently have enrolled at Madison?
250 students, give or take a student or two.
And this would be your third year?
Second.
So you have freshmen, sophomores, and juniors?
Correct.
Okay.
Started the first year with 100.
A little more than 100.
A little 103, maybe. Yeah, so we know that process pretty well.
Frame by frame.
Any follow-up? So you now have 5 minutes to make a closing statement to the panel. As a facilitator, I will cue you when you have 1 minute remaining and when the 5 minutes is complete, so you may begin.
Do you want to go first? I just want to thank you all for what you do, and thank you for your consideration of our application. And Scott and I are looking forward to this adventure. We're looking forward to providing a much-needed school in the area that will serve students who have been underserved in some of these areas that we've highlighted, AP programming, access to AP programming, pre-AP programming, that is to say, growing students and ensuring that they are able to participate not only in the honors track but the advanced placement track. We're big believers in the advanced placement program. The statistics are overwhelming. The 2007 study from the College Board indicates for every student that's exposed to at least one AP class, he or she has a 40% greater likelihood of graduating from high school. Further, for those students who take an AP class, even if they're not ultimately successful with that class, they have a 25% greater likelihood of graduating from college with a four-year degree within 4 years. We think that the school can do something that's not being done in that area thus far to date, and we're excited to get in there and serve that community. Thank you very much. Oh, by the way, one more thing. Scott Keyes has been pivotal, and he's here at my side, and I'm so grateful to him and his support. He helped me immensely in my education team at Madison Highland Prep. I wouldn't want to do an adventure without him in the foregoing future, and so here we have Highland Prep, and Scott has the relative expertise that we need to be successful. So thank you, Scott.
Yeah, no, I don't have much else to add to Dr. Clark's conclusion except for that I appreciate your time in doing this process and the thoroughness of the Charter Board in vetting these applications and the application process itself. I've never been through this. And it's good, it's intense, and it develops, it's a mechanism for developing high quality charter schools, which I really have a passion for now. Like I said in my introduction, I've spent my whole professional career in school finance, specifically Arizona school finance, working with districts and charters. In my early career, it was mainly districts, and now in later in my career, it's charters. And I go out to organizations like Dr. Clark's school and work with them and watch them doing amazing work. And there's a lot of need, and the charters that are filling that need are incredible. I have a lot of other charters that I work with that just doing God's work for sure, and it's impressive. And Dr. Clark is impressive, and seeing what he's done with Madison is okay. Impressive. And thank you, guys. Sorry, it's a little fest.
Well, thank you. To conclude the in-person interview, I will describe what will be happening next. The technical review panel will evaluate the scores from the review of your written application package, as well as the findings of the interview panel. This will include whether your written application met the scoring criteria specified in the application, and whether the interview panel finds sufficient capacity to operate a charter school. Next, a recommendation report will be submitted to board staff and will be presented to the board at the December 14, 2015 meeting. This will be a full day meeting that will begin at 9 in the morning. If you have any questions about the next steps, you may contact Tracy Esposito, and I have our card, and I'll give that to you. Once again, the Arizona State Board for Charter Schools, the Technical Review Panel, and board staff would like to thank you for coming in today and for your interest in providing quality educational choices to the children of Arizona. Thank you.
Thank you very much.